Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Connor Glassy. I am John Manuel. We're going to talk baseball draft today. It's day two of the draft, Connor, as we record this. The first round and supplemental round are in the books, and an eventful evening it was. And, many of you watched our Jim Callis on MLB Network. He's flying back to Chicago today, or else he'd be on this podcast as well. Connor and I back in the office to grind out another day. We blogged yesterday, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. But we had a lot of fun, a giant conglomerate of interns in the office, Connor. Draft day is always an exciting day, especially now when it's really two big draft days. The third day is kind of a little anticlimactic, but day two is even bigger than day one in a lot of ways.
Right. It is a lot of fun. I think it's kind of, it kind of encompasses everything that we do here. It's our high school coverage and our college coverage merged together for the draft coverage, and that kind of starts, kicks things off for the minor league coverage. So
that's right.
It's an exciting time to be at Baseball America headquarters, and that's why we had some interns travel far and wide to come back to the office.
We did. Foreign interns, domestic interns. it's interesting. It's a great group, and a lot of people helping us out this year. Let's just jump right into the first round, the supplemental round of the draft, Connor, because there were quite a few surprises.
Yeah.
Let's just go pick by pick, really. Gerrit Cole 1-1 to the Pirates. I don't think you can really criticize the Pirates for taking Gerrit Cole. He didn't have the biggest year this year. He did dominate last year. He's a two-time first-round pick. He's how you draw it up. I think not only does he have upside, but he's also safe. I think he's he fits the template of what you're looking for in a 1-1 pick.
Sure, and obviously, you would like to see a player have a little bit more success,
yeah.
Statistically, when you're picking a guy 1-1. But that was kind of the Pirates' dilemma, all year. We kind of saw that playing out that way because there wasn't that slam dunk pick that the Nationals have had the past couple of years with Strasburg and Harper.
Yep.
So there was kind of this big group of guys to choose from. But, when you're making a 1-1 pick, you have to look at track record and not just dwell on what a guy's done for the past 5 or 6 weeks. And so Gerrit Cole was defensible there. And I think, Pirates fans should be excited about a potential power rotation.
Charlie Morton.
In the next couple of years.
You're going to start with Ben Badler fave, Charlie Morton, and you'll go from there. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think I don't think that Gerrit Cole was a slam dunk 1-1, but he fits the 1-1 template. And I don't fault them at all for not taking Anthony Rendon, and I certainly don't fault them at all for not taking Danny Holson. The Mariners, you're a Pacific Northwest guy. Seattle was the first real shocker of the night. Danny Holson going second to Seattle. Tom McNamara is a Long Island guy. And we've seen that over and over again. They've drafted heavily in the Northeast at times. And Danny Holton's kind of a Northeast guy. Virginia's kind of in the Northeast. For our draft coverage, it used to be the Northeast just to give the Northeast some players.
Right.
A lot of scouts still do, like the Mid-Atlantic, from Virginia all the way to Jersey. But Danny Holson was a surprise. I don't think we thought Seattle was taking a pitcher. How much of that do you think was purposeful, and what do you think of the Holson pick? Is he the second best player in this draft, as Tom McNamara says?
Well, yeah, it was a surprise, and it's almost funny that it was a surprise because there was this group of six guys that we knew were kind of going to be the top six guys, and I think Friday we had Holson as the number one guy.
Yeah,
but
we did.
All
we
of a sudden, it's a surprise first. That he goes number two, and I think that's just because all along everyone thought the Mariners were going to take a bat. And I think fans were getting really excited about the possibility of a bat. Mariner fans were very excited about the possibility of having Rendon, Nick Franklin, Dustin Ackley, and Justin Smoke. And so
that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and so Holson was a little bit of a wrench into that. And I don't know if it was, the Mariners just playing it close to the vest and throwing a changeup,
right.
A Danny Holson changeup to the
right.
industry.
That's right.
But, it's tough to say that you can't say it's a bad pick.
Right. He's clearly one of the top six players. Like you said, this was a good draft. We talked about it all spring, good draft class. But as the year evolved, I think it was clear there was a group of six guys that did separate themselves a little bit. No offense to Archie Bradley or Francisco Lindor
or
those guys, but those top six guys were the consensus top six, and they took one of those top six guys.
Yeah. So, even though a lot of fans were excited about the possibility of a bat. I mean, Danny Holson's defensible there as well, and I think he's going to move real quickly and be in Seattle pretty soon.
I think that's an attractive part about Danny Holson. I think a left-handed pitcher there is very attractive. You're talking about a compliment to Felix Hernandez and Michael Pineda. Mm-hmm. You just look forward to that. I think if you're a Mariners fan, you think that's a rotation.
It's a great park for lefties to pitch in, too.
That's a great point. I think that you do as a team. You don't draft for knee, but you do have to take your ballpark into account.
And on the flip side, it's a really tough park for right-hand hitters. So when you're talking about Rendon or Bubba Starling right there, kind of, you know,
that's fascinating. Those guys a little bit. That's fascinating. Danny Hulton goes to Arizona at 3. I think this was a match made in heaven. This is a match made in long toss heaven.
Yep.
I'm going to keep making fun of myself on that, but Trevor Bauer wanted to go to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Arizona Diamondbacks reciprocated by taking Trevor Bauer 3rd overall. You know, there's several ways you can look at Bauer. Let's look at a couple of them. First of all, do you think Trevor Bauer ever pitches the way he pitches and ever becomes two-time? I mean, how important do you think Tim Lincecum is to the Trevor Bauer story? I mean, first he is the template that Bauer uses to pattern his delivery after. And number two, Bauer has a similar career to Lincecum in a lot of ways, except with fewer walks.
Yeah.
And with that similar body, a little bit bigger body, but not by a lot. A lot of people are bigger than Tim Lincecum. But a little bit bigger body, similar delivery, similar results, he goes 7 spots higher. I mean, to me, Bauer, a pitcher like Trevor Bauer never goes 3rd overall in the draft if Tim Lincecum hadn't had the career he's already had with the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. If Lincecum had gone out and fell on his face, it would have been a lot harder for Trevor Bauer to, you know, go as high as he did, I think. I think you're right with that.
There's already so much skepticism about Bauer and the way he trains and how many pitches he throws and all that stuff, the 8 straight or 9 straight complete games, whatever it was.
9.
But I think that skepticism is tempered by the fact that Lincecum has done what Lincecum has done. He's basically had one bad month as a professional.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And hopefully we'll get to see him match up someday soon.
Yeah, honestly, I would love that. Who would you have taken, though, Arizona at 3? Like, I would have taken Bauer. I mean, I'm a Bauer apologist. I think my feeling is that you probably would have taken Dylan Bundy, who went 4th to the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Bundy, you know, that would have been defensible as well. I mean, he's almost viewed as a college pitcher because he's such a polished high school pitcher. I mean,
correct.
He has power stuff, and he's not a very big guy himself.
Yeah, 6'1", but my gosh, his body is thick, and he just looks explosive.
So muscular. Yeah, a lot of explosion in the body, and, you know, he's got a chance to have 4-plus pitches, and he's got a nice, athletic, repeatable delivery. I mean, you watch that video of him last night. It's remarkable how well he lands that front leg, and it stays there. It doesn't slide. It doesn't – it's just, like, glued.
He's anchored. He is anchored. And it's not a hard landing either. It's firm. It plants. His delivery is – I would rather teach the way Dylan Bundy does it than the way that Trevor Bauer
does
it.
It's textbook.
Right. So it's also going to be fascinating because they both are big long toss guys. It's going to be fascinating to watch those guys. Again, I don't think there's a cookie-cutter way.
Right.
I think pitchers need to be allowed to develop their own, see what works for them.
Completely agree with that.
But Dylan Bundy is going to be fascinating to watch because he's a 6'1 high school right-hander. He's not the way you usually draw it up.
No, he's not.
Here's two 6'1 right-handers going 3 and 4 overall in the draft.
Yeah, he's not how you draw it up, but when you talk about things that you want in a pitcher, he has everything you want, except for maybe the size.
That's about it, for a couple of inches of height. I would take the guy who's 6'1 and has everything else.
Yeah.
And
let me just go back to Bundy for one second. I just want to say that he's been doing that with his delivery for a while now. The only time I have seen him was when he was going into his junior year, and that was in Jupiter. He was on the Yankee scout team, and that was actually the first thing I remember about him. I'm like, wow, he really sticks that landing foot, and it helps him throw strikes with all of his pitches.
He's pretty impressive. And the Orioles, to get a guy like that at number 4, I think, is a coup for the Baltimore Orioles, who now have 2 Bundys. So double your Bundy pleasure for the Baltimore Orioles. And then really, Connor, the next most intriguing pick. I mean, I think after the Mariners took Hulton at 2 and kind of zigged when everyone thought they'd zag, you get to Kansas City and they're staring Anthony Rendon in the face. They're staring Bubba Starling in the face. They're staring Francisco Lindor down, which I think there was a lot of thought they were going to take Lindor. The college pitchers they wanted were off the board.
Yeah.
I think if they'd taken a college pitcher here, it might have been a little bit of a reach. And so they don't take a college pitcher. They go with the hometown guy, Bubba Starling. This was maybe the most exciting pick of the draft for me.
I think I agree. I you know, I was very excited to see Bubba go to his hometown team, and I'm sure the fans were very excited as well. You know, it's always good when the talent at that, you know, where at the spot where you're picking lines up with, you know, the player that you want to take.
It was pretty cool that it matched up. I agree completely. But four, so the first time in draft history that four pitchers go the first four picks, and then you get Bubba Starr and the hometown guy at five. So the Nationals at six, third year in a row, number one player on Baseball America's draft board, the Washington Nationals get him, and they didn't even have to pick first overall to take him. Long relationship between Mike Rizzo, their general manager. He's had a very successful history of drafting Scott Boras Corporation clients. Anthony Rendon, a Scott Boras Corporation client, and he goes sixth overall to the Nats. The question I got from Nats fans, even a couple media members last night on Twitter was, well, we have Ryan Zimmerman, so where are we going to play Anthony Rendon? Where do you feel Rendon fits best as a Nat? Second base? Left field? First base? You think you leave him at third base and move Ryan Zimmerman? What would you do if you were the Nats going forward with Anthony Rendon?
I think good teams draft the best player available and let it sort itself out. For now, what I would do is I would leave Rendon at third base for as long as possible and see what happens. Okay. I mean, because you never know what's going to happen. You never know if, you know, he'll get injured or – but I would leave him at third base for now. And then, you know, maybe if he's maybe a year away and Zimmerman's still at third base for them and – you know, things aren't working out, then you think about moving him. But I would try to leave him at third base just as long as possible. That's where he's most comfortable. And I know he has played some other positions, but I don't know. What would you do?
I would definitely leave him in the dirt, and I would give him a try at second base. To me, this guy could be a Jeff Kent kind of offensive player. And probably a better defender than Jeff Kent. I think he's driven. What makes Anthony Rendon for me is when Aaron Fitt interviewed him last year, and he talked about how motivated he was by the talk that he wasn't a good defensive player as a freshman, and he became just a stud defender as a sophomore. I think this guy's motivated. At the same time, I do think there's something there with his shoulder.
Yeah. You know?
There's less stress at second base. You do have to have arm on the throw. You do have to have arm strength to do the most important thing at second base, which is turn the double play. Physically, I think he fits at second base at 6 foot 180. I don't think Buster Olney was making that stuff up when he was in big league executive saw him as a second baseman. Buster's reputable and well sourced.
Yeah,
so I don't think he was making that up. I think that Anthony Rendon would be a fine third baseman in the David Wright mold. If he can be that kind of offensive player at second base and be an average, I think, put it this way, he's more likely to be a good defender at second base than Dustin Ackley. I think that's just because Dustin Ackley looks like Chase Utley. He ain't Chase Utley.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that was a force. So to me, Anthony Rendon at second base is not a force. So I like the idea of Rendon at second base. I think that's your best bet if you're the Nats. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Zimmerman, Rendon, and Harper. Well, let's go Zimmerman 3-hole, Harper 4-hole. Please tell me you saw the video of Bryce Harper blowing the kiss the other day.
I tried to find it.
It's awesome. He hits the home run with his cheesy mustache and his Joe Dirt mullet, A. B, he poses after he hits the home run. He does a very slow walk. So I guess he is LeBron of baseball because he poses a lot like LeBron. Third, it was like a Wilson Ramos slow trot around the bases. Fourth, he just looked at the pitcher and gave him a little kiss like that.
There was no hand gesture?
No, there was no hand. It was all in the head. This guy, obviously there's a little maturity issue. And you know, he's allowed. He's 18. A. B. Nobody seems to have as much fun playing baseball as Bryce Harper. Yeah. I mean, dude, he just loves playing the game. I love that about him. I don't see that as a negative.
I love that about him. I've always said, I thought, you know, people saying that he had bad makeup were just flat out wrong.
Or just saying he's a bad kid. The emphasis there is kid.
Yeah.
He's kid.
Yeah.
And
let me just also add this. If we have any Time Warner employees working, can you please get Masson on Time Warner? Because I want to watch Nationals games here real soon.
Yeah, you got to get the dish. By the way, we've got some Twitter questions. We're going to get to your Twitter questions here in just a second. You can follow us at Baseball America, or 23,000 odd followers. I've pushed past the 3,000 mark on Twitter the last couple of weeks. Very exciting.
Creeping up towards 2,000 myself.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm close to 3,200 now, which is fun. Jim Cowell's over the 10,000 mark. So send us your questions. We'll be happy to answer them. I'm at John Manuel BA. He's at Connor Glassy. Jim at Jim Cowell's BA. Let's go a little quicker here with the rest of the first round, though, Connor. Arizona at 7 with Archie Bradley. That seemed to make sense. I mean,
sure.
It's not protected. Like, they could lose it if they don't assign Archie Bradley. But to me, you take a guy at that pick who you want, and then you can spread the bonus out.
Yeah, you can spread it out. And it's a nice compliment to Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer, the polished high polished college arm, and then you get the high upside high school guy there.
I just love that this is an organization that has a lot of off-speed jokers, and they took some power arms this year.
Yeah.
And that's a good change. What'd you think of Francisco Lindor at 8 to Cleveland? I thought that was a bold move and an out-of-character move for that team.
It was a little bit out of character, but I like it. I mean, you know, that's a team that could use a shortstop. I mean, I know that, you know, Ezreal Cabrera – it's funny because Ezreal Cabrera is actually a player that I thought Lindor kind of compared to a little bit. It's a switch-hitting, good glove, showing a little bit of power this year too. And so it'll be interesting to see those two in the same organization, but you never have too many shortstops. I mean, we saw a run of shortstops later on in the draft.
That's the first shortstop. That's the first high school player drafted in the first round by the Tribe since 2001. And back then, it was two pitchers, Dan Denham and Alan Horn. I like this move for Cleveland. I really think that Cleveland the last 3 or 4 years has been more aggressive and, frankly, better at the top of the draft. Chisholm Hall, Alex White, Drew Pomeranz, now Lindor the last 4 years. That's a big difference from the days of Michael Aubrey, who I love, but had a bad back when they drafted him. And some of these other guys. I like the direction Cleveland has moved in the last 4 years.
I do too.
Then the Cubs, I don't think this was a surprise. It was a higher on our – it took Javier Baez higher than I think we had him on our board. But, you know, Javier Baez on talent is a top 10 talent, I think, in this draft. I think all the makeup questions were really there for him. I mean, he and Taylor Greary are the two guys I thought would drop because of makeup concerns.
Right.
Greary did drop you know, when we say makeup concerns, I know there's some people who think that's something we hide behind. It's actually, I think, something that we are using to protect a player from allegations. There's a lot of smoke there with Taylor Greary.
Right.
And if we were the New York Times, Connor, we would dispatch a writer to South Carolina to dig and get sourced ironclad reports on Taylor Greary's makeup. We don't have that. We have secondhand rumors, innuendo, or people telling us stories off the record that we can't report.
Right.
So I think for us to say makeup concerns, immaturity, these kind of things, that's not us hiding behind anything. That's us trying to be responsible.
It's more responsible than saying what we've heard.
Just exactly.
Like throwing that out there.
So. That's absolutely true. With Baez, it's pretty documented. It's different with Javier Baez. There's a sketchy past. His coach is his legal guardian, but his mom and his family are still in the picture, but no one's quite sure how. They're in the picture. I directly asked his guardian, Ron Dickerson, what is the stat, you know, where is his mom and what's his mom's role in his life? And I didn't get a good answer.
Yeah.
I got an obfuscating answer. Then on the field, Javier Baez is kind of high strung. His scouts consistently say he's not a great teammate. You've seen it yourself.
Hey, he's just kind of a punk. I mean, you know, you don't see players ejected from showcase games.
Pretty much
ever, and that's what happened to him last year in Jupiter when he was on the Cardinals scout team. He got into almost a fight at third base when he slid into third base, stealing third base, and he got kicked out of the game. And so while both, you know, Baez and Greary fall under kind of the umbrella of makeup concerns that we say, they're different. You know, Baez is more just kind of a, you know.
Well, even the way that his coach, Ryan Guardian, put it, is that I taught him to play the game with a chip on his shoulder, and I'm responsible for that, and that's probably my fault.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He plays with a chip on his shoulder and just kind of, you know, is just kind of mean out there. And
I got that from a couple scouts.
Yeah.
Mean streak.
Right.
Mean streak was the phrase that that came up, and it wasn't isolated. It was for several people. But you know what? You can dial it back. It's hard to turn up that intensity.
Exactly.
But you can dial it back, especially when kids grow up. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the hope. And the bottom line is this guy's bat is spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real and it's spectacular.
Yeah.
So then you have the Padres at 10. After we talk about Corey Spangenberg, let's take some questions on our Twitter accounts. But Spangenberg at 10, Jim Callis had reported all along the Padres were tied to Spangenberg, hoped to get him at 25. I think with a pick protected, put it this way, the Diamondbacks at 7, last year they drafted Barrett Laps at 6. They don't get him, they get a compensation pick at 7. In my mind, they trade up to Archie Bradley.
Sure.
Meanwhile, the Padres, Carson Whitson last year, they don't sign him. I like Corey Spangenberg, but Corey Spangenberg does not equal. I mean, Archie Bradley greater than Barrett Laps.
Yeah.
Carson Whitson greater than Corey Spangenberg.
I agree with that as well.
I don't think Spangenberg is a bad pick, but you're not shooting for the moon at 10 when you take Corey Spangenberg.
Right. I don't think Spangenberg is a bad pick either, but at the same time, when you look at the Padres, they had a lot of extra picks, and you kind of have to weigh their whole draft as a whole. So, right. So if you really like Spangenberg, you want him at 25, well, grab him at 10 and then go down and get Joe Ross at 25, who's going to be a tough sign at a UCLA. And
the thing I really liked about the Padres draft, that's a really good segue. Spangenberg at 10 is not Whitson, but he's a polished college bat. Really, as far as pure college hitters, only guys in the draft who, in my mind, were slam dunk better than him were guys like Rendon and CJ Krohn, as far as pure hit.
Right.
Spangenberg, pure Wong. Hit. Colton Wong is in that same mix to me with Corey Spangenberg. I think Spangenberg and Wong are pretty similar. Spangenberg runs better mm-hmm. than Colton Wong. I think they're very similar players. Then you have Joe Ross, Michael Kelly, a couple of really projectable high school arms. Kelly has the perfect, 6'5", 195 pitcher's frame. Also, I think it helps when you see a high school player who was on a team that won a state title
right.
and led that team to the state title. I like that about my high school picks. That's Michael Kelly. He did it on the mound. He did it in the field. He did it at the plate.
It's nice to see Michael Kelly going to an NL team because he can hit, too. He had Tyler Green on his high school team, and he out-hit him.
He definitely out-hit him. He out-hit him, and he out-homered him, and he came up big when West Boca High needed it. And as a one-time Boca resident, West Boca High was a swamp when I was in Boca, but it's kind of neat that West Boca High won a state title.
Yeah.
But Joe Ross, a little bit, not as big as his brother, but more projectable because he has a cleaner arm and a better stride. And he's,
right.
even at 6'2", 180, excellent athlete,
You talk about Spangenberg not being as good as Carson Wentz. Well, Joe Ross is pretty close.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yep.
Similar in a line.
Those NorCal kids kind of get, they kind of float under the radar a little bit. I think if Joe Ross was in Southern California or in Florida, like Carson Wentz was, he probably would have gone a little bit higher.
It's weird how NorCal kind of gets swept under the rug.
It is really weird.
It's California, for crying out loud.
I know. They kind of have that little brother complex up there, which is funny. Joe Ross is a little brother.
Nice. He fits. And then, I loved their last two picks. Brett Austin, in my mind, was one of the most attractive catchers out there. Supplemental first-round pick out of Providence High in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Jace Peterson, I don't know if he was a personal cheese ball, but I like left-handed, middle infield, guy who walks more than he strikes out for 3 years in college, also played football. There's a lot to like with sure. Jace Peterson there. So that, sure. to me, I think you're bringing up a great point. I wasn't trying to bang on the Padres necessarily, but when you the portfolio of their first five picks makes a lot of sense. And in my mind, makes the Spangenberg pick at 10 sound a lot better. Let's take a couple of these Twitter questions. We got several of them. Let's see. Richard Thorpe. With the number of picks the Rays had, do they play the book for where they or were they? Did they play by the book or were they creative? All right, the spelling there threw me a little bit, but the Rays, Connor. Yeah, the Rays. Well, I'm gonna let you take most of these questions. The Rays, picked first. They didn't pick first until 24, but then it seemed like every other pick was theirs. And ten of the first 60 picks yesterday with the Rays. Roberto Hernandez and Donovan were the busiest guys in the supplemental round.
Yeah, I think the right answer for this is that there is no way to play the book.
That's right. There's no book.
Had this many picks.
There's no book for this.
So, they were. I wouldn't say they were creative, but they definitely did what we thought they were going to do in that they took a portfolio approach. I mean, I love them getting Taylor Greary at 24. I thought that was great value.
Yeah, no doubt.
He kind of slid down a little bit. The same with Mikey Montek. He slid a little bit too, and they grabbed both those guys.
I was stunned that Montek went to 31. Stunned.
Yeah.
A lot of teams that I thought were going to draft a college bat passed on Mikey Montek, and I wonder almost if the fact that LSU didn't play for the last 2 weeks, just that just that inertia of him being done, if other people just didn't pass him because he wasn't right. playing anymore. Just strange that he fell to 31.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that played into it or just teams didn't see him as a center fielder, and the bat definitely profiles better if he can stay in center field.
Yeah, I think John Hart actually put it well. I think he's a solid major league average outfielder, whether he's in It would be better if he could do that in center field, but I think he can do that in right field. He's got a right field arm. So, I mean, like, I don't know, who's a solid major league average right fielder? They're not, you know, can this guy have a Carlos Quinn type career? I think it'll be a lot more consistent than Carlos Quinn. I think that's one of the things I heard him is that you look in the big leagues, you're trying to find a guy who played outfield in college on a corner who's a right-handed hitter. There are very few of them. That's why I brought up Carlos Quinn. He's about the only one. I mean, there's just not that many guys. The guys who play the outfield corner in the big leagues, like a Ryan Braun, well, he was a shortstop and a third baseman in college. Right. Most of the other guys, the rest of those guys who were college bats are you know, guys who hit left-handed. Your right outfielders are guys like Corey Hart, even at 6'6", was playing third base in Double-A.
Yeah.
Mikey Montek's been an outfielder from the start. So, you know, Mike Cameron, center field. I'm just taking a right outfielders. It's a small group. It's a tough profile. I think the profile is what drove Mikey Montek down to 31, but I think he's great value for Tampa there.
I did too. And then they went with some, you know, they took some signability guys. Like, I think Blake Snell moved up because of signability.
Yeah, he's going to sign for slot, right?
Yeah, you got to think so. I mean, he has great stuff, and he pitched well in front of large groups of scouts, which helped him. But, you know, he's a left-hander. He's been up to 94, mostly like 90, 91. But, you know, scouts I talked to wonder if you can actually project on him. Because even though he's a tall, skinny guy, he doesn't have a lot of room. Okay. Yeah, very thin frame. So it might end up just being a 45-50 fastball instead of that 60 fastball that he's shown flashes of.
What we call the Baseball America office a Matt Blood frame. after former BA staffer Matt Blood.
Skipper.
Skipper Blood is a thin-framed guy. Yep. In other words, a guy I wish I looked more like. I wish I were a little more thin-framed. Yeah, Connor and I are not, no one's ever going to say that we're thin-framed. We're just big-boned. I like Kes Carter for them. Also, their college picks they took there, Kes Carter and Grayson Garvin. I think there was some late buzz that I didn't buy on Grayson Garvin going 59th. He went 59th over there. There was late buzz he'd go in the end of the first round. To me, let's compare him to, say, Sean Gilmartin, who Atlanta got at 28. Well, Grayson Garvin throws harder. You know, better present fastball. What are they going to pitch with on every 5 days rest? I'm going to say they're both going to pitch with an average fastball. It might be fringe average for Gilmartin. Command, I'm going to give that a slight edge to Gilmartin. Breaking ball, edge Gilmartin. It's an average slider versus a below average breaking ball for Garvin.
Right.
Changeup, even though Garvin has a good changeup, I think it's going to be a solid average big league changeup, and Gilmartin's going to pitch with a plus changeup. Athleticism, edge Gilmartin. I think that's why Sean Gilmartin. I think a lot of people tried to make it like that Grayson Garvin was right there with these other college left-handers or other left-handers in the draft. There just aren't that many lefties with a below-average breaking ball pitching in the big leagues.
Right. And the results have been there. But when you start breaking down tools by tools, you know, that's why
I think
Gilmartin went at the end of the first round and Grayson Garvin went in the supplemental.
I think this is exactly the right spot for Grayson Garvin. I think it's a value pick. Do I think that Dick Bosman and the Rays can develop that breaking ball for Grayson Garvin? If anybody can, it'll be the Rays. They are really, really good at developing pitchers. And it would not shock me if Grayson Garvin got the Durham pretty soon and was on a two-seamer and a cutter. Along with that fastball, and that might make up for that deficient breaking ball. He's a pretty good value. And Kes Carter, again, at 56, pretty good value to me.
It's almost it'd be basically impossible not to like this draft just because they have so many high picks.
Right.
But I really like it. They got a lot of upside. Even though they did probably have to take a few signable players, even though signable players, you know, they mixed in a lot of upside there. Jake Hager and Brandon Martin, they got a couple shortstops. They got Tyler Goodell, who played third base for his high school team because his shortstop was Alex Mondino, who's going to Stanford, and another really good player on a great team that was number one for us for a lot of the year at St. Francis there. But Tyler Goodell is a player that has size and above-average speed, so he could actually move to center field for them.
If he signs. Is that not Eric Goodell's younger brother?
It is.
And that's
it's a fascinating backstory with the family. His dad is like a pioneer in the biotech industry that helped create synthetic insulin and synthetic human growth hormone.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. Yeah. it's a bright family. But his brother did sign last year early for $350,000. He was an eligible sophomore, didn't have to sign.
Right.
Could have been UCLA's closer this year. Boy, they could have used Eric Goodell.
Yeah.
And no offense to Nick Vandertwig, but Eric Goodell probably would have been a better closer for UCLA, and the bullpen hurt them all year.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other Twitter questions here. Let's see. Mojo Dev, Scott Mofield, a regular asker of questions to the podcast. What do you see? Do you see Bauer signing quickly to try to get to the big leagues this year? It seems to have that type of mentality. I haven't actually really talked to Bauer on the signability, but my impression was that he wanted to go to Arizona badly enough that it wouldn't shock me if he signed sooner than later.
Right.
The big question for Arizona would be his workload this year. If you don't sign him quickly and get him in the pro ball now, and don't forget, he started throwing for real in February in games that mattered.
Yeah.
That means he was tuning. His spring training was late January.
Right.
He's been throwing since January. This guy, even if Arizona goes to the postseason, this is not a guy you want throwing in October or September, even if you were good at it in the big leagues. And even in the best case scenario, you just don't want somebody throwing pitches that matter from January or February until late October.
Right.
So for me, even if he were to sign quickly, it would just be to kind of get in and get in a little work. I don't even think he needs a little work. I'm not saying he needs the rest either, because I think Trevor Bauer wants to throw. He throws so that he can throw.
Right.
That's the whole point. In a nutshell of what he does, you get your body conditioned to throw, then you throw so you can be ready to throw.
Pitch less, throw more.
Right? That's it. Yeah. That's it. So I think Trevor Bauer could be in the big league soon. That could maybe be part of like a Chris Sale type deal. But at the same time, I think the more prudent approach would be to give him a lot of time off.
Sure.
And maybe start him back up in instructional league, like UCLA would have with fall ball. He didn't pitch last summer either. He'd spent the whole summer working on that effective velocity stuff with Ron Wolforth down in Texas. So he's going to have to adjust his workload and his workout routine to professional baseball. It'd be good if he could do some of that this year. But yeah, I do think he'll sign. I don't see him necessarily in the big leagues this year, unless it was like some kind of, again, like a way to get him extra money beyond his bonus.
Right.
Josh Bell to the Pirates at 61 with the first pick today, Connor. You see that? I don't see that.
I don't think so. Let me throw a question at you. Which player are you most excited to see get drafted today? Who are you wondering where they're going to go off the board?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question, actually. Well, Grayman Getzman, I mentioned last night, high school hitter out of Florida. I was intrigued, a little surprised that say a guy like Dante Bichette went off the board before he did.
Yeah,
I'll be very interested to see Daniel Norris today. What happens if anything with Daniel Norris? Put out a $4 million signing question. Basically, wants $4 million to sign, and that Clemson might wind up getting an ace. They haven't really had a true ace for a couple of years. And maybe they get one. And Daniel Norris, he sounds like he's almost as tough of a sign as Josh Bell. And those are two guys back-to-back on our draft board at 15 and 16. I'm trying to think of another guy just from my area. Go ahead.
Amir Garrett.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Amir Garrett. Amir _ Garrett. I mean, St. John's basketball recruit. Worked out for Seattle. Worked out for Boston. 6'6", athletic lefties. Scraping 96. Now, I've never gotten 96 from a scout. I've gotten that from his coach, the assistant coach there, Nick Aiello at College Southern Nevada, who's worked with him. A lot of consistent low 90s stuff, and here's a guy who was throwing like 88 last summer with basically no coaching.
Yeah.
So Amir Garrett, there's a world of potential there. He almost seems like too good to be true for the Rays. I was kind of hoping the Rays would have taken him yesterday with one of their sub-picks.
One of the biggest wild cards and most interesting stories.
I think he's definitely one of the most interesting stories. Who are you looking to see?
Well, Garrett's one of them for sure. And then, another wild card basketball player that I'm excited about is Justin James. Sacramento City College.
That's a good one, too.
Deion James' kid. He originally went to Sacramento to play basketball and recently just switched to baseball. And he's a big physical kid with a lot of tools. He can run. He shows some power. But
I like that you're looking for Taylor Ard. Personal cheese ball if there ever was
personal
one.
Personal cheese ball, yes.
That's awesome, though. He is, I think he is your all-time personal cheese ball.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up real quick because we've already taken 35 minutes. Let's get through the rest of the first round a little bit. Connor, at 11, Houston took George Springer. What a shock. They liked that. They wanted an athlete and went for upside. I do think George Springer makes a lot of sense. At 11, he cut down the swing and miss. The statistics say that George Springer had a better year this year. Our reports are pretty mixed on him. And just his approach and just the idea at the plate, it sounds like he's a tinkerer. It's going to be a really nice, I think, project for that player development system in Houston, which has had a lot of turnover. So we'll see what happens there. For me, Milwaukee did very well for itself at 12 and 15. Taylor Youngman and then Jed Bradley. Maybe not crazy upside there, but Those are about as safe a picks as you could find in this draft.
They're not the sexiest picks, you know, that maybe some fans were hoping for, but you got to imagine those guys are going to be quick through the minor leagues as polished college pitchers, and you can really add a couple guys to your pitching staff pretty quickly.
I agree. I think both those guys shoot to the top of their prospect rankings. I'd rather have had Taylor Youngman than, even though I love him, Mark Rogers, for example. Right. The Mets, I think it was pretty bold to take Brandon Nimmo at 13. We had the link to Brandon Nimmo for a long time. I think I'm happiest just for the Mets scouting department. We heard all along that they were on Nimmo, wanted him. That was a guy they wanted. And then they were able to – and then their general manager and, you know, Sandy Alderson and Paul DePodesta, who obviously the head of their scouting and player development – but those guys listen to their scouts. I think that's the best part of this for me. If you're a Mets fan, I think you're happy that your general manager and your brain trust, who was so associated with one way of thinking, drafting college guys, that kind of thing, trusted their scouts.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love Brandon Nimmo going in that spot. I mean, I feel like Baseball America kind of went out on a limb a little bit, putting him in our high school top 10 in November.
Yeah.
So it's great to see him go where he goes. And obviously, there's risk there, just being, you know, just the fact that he's from Wyoming.
Right.
And hasn't had the kind of, you know, experience that a lot of these other high school players have had. But
he had an unflattering mugshot as well on the TV, which is unfortunate.
But, you know, you really like that left-handed swing. It's short. It's simple.
Repeatable.
It reminds me of a more athletic Christian Yelich, who the Marlins took in
a
similar spot last year, just because it's that kind of bat, I think. It's a John Olerud type bat.
With athleticism, and I like that. That's fascinating. Jose Fernandez at 14, it just seems like it makes sense for Florida to take a Cuban immigrant.
Miami, yeah. I mean,
but at the same time, this was the Cuban we expected to get drafted yesterday. Crazy Onelkis Garcia spec stuff. And more you read about that stuff, the more we keep digging on it. If there's ever an international draft, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't want to put an explicit tag on this, but
no.
This situation is a cluster bleep. I mean,
the exact word that was coming to my mind.
What a joke. Man, what a joke the whole thing is. Oh, he's declared eligible for the draft on Saturday at 10 o'clock, and then the draft is Monday. And then we heard he was going to be a first rounder.
I felt like I was chasing the ghost yesterday.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it just...
And he's represented by... this guy? Oh, wait. Or his age is this guy?
Yeah.
We don't even know. I mean,
don't know how old he is?
Yeah, he's 23.
There was an article that came out, you know, in 2008 saying he was 20, and now they're saying, no, he's 21. So, I mean, there's just all kinds of questions and problems with that situation.
Do you think Javier Baez is sketchy?
Right.
And how about this guy? His picture was pretty impressive on Facebook. He looks like an athlete.
Yes.
But, I mean, all he also needed to look at is this guy's stats in Cuba. He did not dominate in Cuba, and his walk rate was almost worse than our oldest Chapman's without the 103 miles an hour. So, but we digress. Chris Reed at 16 to the Dodgers, a reach. It seems like
a reach. I think it is a reach. And, you know, I've seen some people online saying, oh, they just drafted a Lugie. But, you know, he's more than that.
He's definitely more than that.
He's athletic. He's got three pitches. He has a starter profile, even though that's not what he's been used as.
Check Aaron Fitz right up from Aaron, just seeing Chris Reed for an inning in the third the other day against Cal State Fullerton in a 1-0 game where he got the save. Chris Reed was very good and flashing the plus fastball and average secondary pitches, and he's got a pitcher's body.
Yep.
If you're going to trust Logan White on one thing, you're going to trust him on pitching.
Sure.
Clayton Kershaw, Chad Billingsley, Edwin Jackson, James McDonald, the list goes on.
So, yeah, I do think it was a little bit of reach, but there is definite upside there. It's a fresh arm, you know.
Yeah, good point too.
And seems like their hands were tied a little bit.
No doubt. They were in a difficult situation. I take Chris Reed over Onelkis Garcia spec.
Sure.
CJ Krohn at 17. We both love Krohn. I think it's neat that he goes to the team where his dad made his big league debut back in 1991.
Yep.
Looking for his brother to get drafted today. 18, 19, 20. The college pitcher run, Sonny Gray to Oakland. Did you ever think Sonny Gray would go 18?
No, I didn't. I mean, that's great value for the A's.
I love that value for them. Matt Barnes at 19 to Boston. I mean, that was in our original mock draft a couple weeks ago when Jim Callis and I were going over that mock. Jim was like, I don't think that Matt Barnes will get this far, but I know that if he gets this far, Boston would stop it. It's like, well, he got that far.
Yeah.
You know, that is very, very far for a guy with that kind of stuff and that kind of track record to fall. And Red Sox fans will get a chance to see him in Super Regionals next week when he plays against South Carolina, because UConn shocked the world and won that regional at Clemson. after Matt Barnes lost the first game on Friday. Tyler Anderson at 20, I think, again, you want to talk about a safe pick.
Yeah.
He's a four-pitch lefty with a good body and athleticism going to...
Focus like a laser.
Yeah.
He's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great pick. I like that pick for Colorado. I don't know if Tyler Anderson is necessarily a frontline starter, but he has a chance to be a Jeff Francis type of guy for Rockies fans.
Yeah.
Tyler Beede at 21, one of the toughest signs, it sounds like, in the first round, Connor. You think Toronto takes that pick knowing they have a really good shot at signing Tyler Beede, or are they rolling the dice there?
Well, I think they took him thinking that they're going to get it done. And they actually took two Vanderbilt commits because they took Kevin Colmer as well.
That's right.
So, you know, maybe they're rolling the dice a little bit and hedging their bets by taking two of them, you know?
Yeah,
but I think they're going to get Beede done.
I like Tyler Beede at 21. He's at 20. He sounds like a definitely top 20, 21 talent.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely. It's great for Nathan Rohde. It's Tyler Beede's been a personal cheese ball for a long time, and he writes up the Blue Jays. So
oh, that's awesome.
He enjoys that.
Colton Wong at 22 and Alex Meyer at 23. Those are teams that were linked to those two players for a long time. We knew the Nationals liked Alex Meyer. We thought they might even have taken him at 6, but they wait till 23 to get their man. Colton Wong, polished college bat, who has performed perfect for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And a guy I think who will move quickly.
I think so, too. And I wrote this in the little...
It's like a talented Aaron
recap.
Miles.
I wrote this in the brief recap that I did. But I really love Colton Wong going to a National League team just because of his versatility.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he spent a little bit of time at catcher, center field, shortstop. And I think that helps the National League team more than an American League team cause with all the pitcher changes and things like that.
I agree. I think that he will be a natural fit there. Taylor Guerrero, we've already discussed at 24. When you get maybe the second or third best high school arm in the draft at 24th overall, that's value. And that's all we need to say about that. Joe Ross at 25, we've discussed. Blake Swihart, hey, big shock. The Red Sox take a catcher at 26. I mean,
yep.
You talked about that all spring, basically. Did they take the right guy in your mind, Kyle?
I think they did. I like Austin. I love Austin Hedges. And he's definitely the better defender. He's the best defensive catcher in this class and the best defensive catcher some scouts have seen in a long time. But there are more questions with the bat. There's no questions with Swihart's bat. I mean, there's some, but
right. There's
far fewer questions with Swihart's bat.
That's
he's
his
switch
strength.
Hitter with power. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
His strength is his bat.
That is his strength. And even though he's only been switching for a couple of years, well, he's only been catching for a couple of years too, which is athletic. And he shows the versatility that, you know, if you have to move him, he can play third base. He could maybe even play second base. He's that athletic.
Hmm. I mean, to me, it's like the kind of thing where an instructional league or even next year's spring training special instructor or retired catcher Jason Veritek makes Blake Swihart.
Oh, no,
his
yeah, no doubt. You definitely
project.
Definitely want him to stay a catcher, but
he has options, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Robert Stevenson at 27 to the Reds. First high school pitcher the Reds have drafted in the first round since Homer Bailey. Still kind of waiting for Homer Bailey to breakthrough, but I still like the Robert Stevenson pick. Was the consensus that Stevenson was slightly better prospect than Joe Ross? Maybe just Ross finished a little bit better. I think we kind of expected Stevenson to go ahead of Ross.
Yeah, I mean, earlier in the year we did have Ross ahead of Stevenson.
Oh, okay,
and they were always kind of neck and neck.
Okay,
always, you know, I think some teams preferred Stevenson, some teams preferred Ross, but.
Stevenson throws a little harder presently, it sounds
right.
like. But Joe Ross may be a little bit more athletic.
Yeah.
Whereas Stevenson's a bigger guy, a bigger frame guy.
Yeah.
We already discussed Sean Gilmartin at 28 to the Braves. Joe Panik and Levi Michael, San Francisco and Minnesota, the next two picks. A little bit surprising on both those counts. Joe Panik seems like a John Barr kind of guy, though. John Barr's a Mid-Atlantic guy, you know, from that Maryland. I think he's from that Maryland, New Jersey area. I know he used to work for the Orioles. Joe Panik's a grinder. He's a grinder who can hit. Honestly, I don't think there's a big difference between Joe Panik and Colton Wong. I don't think there's a big difference between Joe Panik and Levi Michael.
Yeah.
Even though we had Panik rated lower at 67, it seems like the biggest issue is that Panik is not a big runner. Those guys run better than Joe Panik.
Yeah.
But I think when it's all said and done, if you ascribe to the theory, wait a minute, I'm not going to use either of those words. If you believe in the theory that you're either a burner, a clogger, or you're on average. And that's not a lot of scouts who think that. Well, then there's no difference between these three guys because Michael and Wong, I think, do run better than Joe Panik. But if they're all second basemen, which they might all be, and they all run average, which I think in that definition they really kind of do.
Right.
And Joe Panik is right there with those guys. He draws a lot of walks. He hits with some authority. He's a pure hitter. I like Joe Panik, actually, at 29. The more I think about it, the more I get jazzed up about it. I don't know why, but I kind of wish that Joe Panik would have stayed at St. John's for one more year, and Amir Aguirre would go there and play basketball and baseball and play with Joe Panik. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
I kind of like for... Honestly, I kind of want Amir Aguirre to go play basketball and baseball.
Maybe the Giants will draft Amir Aguirre.
Ooh. I would love to see the ninja get his paws on on Amir Aguirre. That would be phenomenal, actually. But I like the Joe Panik pick at 29, even though it's a little off the board. Who am I kidding? I'm kind of a Giants draft apologist, you know? I still think Nate Shearholz would be worth something, so... Joe Panik at 29, I think an interesting pick, but not a bad pick. And to me, he's very similar again to Levi Michael and to Colton Wong. Levi Michael to the Twins surprised me. I don't think of the Twins as the kind of team that drafts a college middle infielder. I think it's a smart pick for them. Their middle infield situation is a little fluid in their farm system, and especially at the big leagues. He might be a shortstop. I'm guessing that Levi Michael is not a shortstop for Ron Gardenhire. I think he takes a very special shortstop for Ron Gardenhire.
Yeah.
I mean, Jason Bartlett wasn't good enough for Ron Gardenhire. I think Ron Gardenhire's evaluation there was wrong, but I don't see Ron Gardenhire going anywhere. Even with the Twins having the bad year they've had this year, they're starting to get things going.
It is interesting.
He makes more sense at second for me for them.
Yeah, you know, there are a few teams out there that really do take their manager's preferences into account when they're drafting. Some don't because there's
managers
turnover
change.
And things like that.
Correct.
There are a few teams out there that really... You know,
it matters.
Take to heart what their manager likes and dislikes.
I could see Levi Michael being their second baseman long term, and a guy like a Danny Santana or Polanco, the other Latin shortstop they signed. Levi Michael to Minnesota definitely surprised me, but I think it surprised me in a good way. Mikey Matuk and Jake Hager at 31 and 32. And that brings us to Texas. Don't mess with Texas, Connor, but we're going to end the podcast on a negative, on a down note, because I don't think either one of us thought that Texas, they clearly, you know, hey, Texas' scouting department's done some nice things.
Yeah.
Let's start off with that. But Kevin Matthews, I don't know if I think he's a reach at 33. If you think he's a more athletic Robbie Erlin, well, that's pretty doggone good. But let's start off with the knowns, what we can quantify. He's 5'10 or 5'11.
I thought you said gnomes.
Yeah, no, that's yours. That's
you're making a short joke already on Kevin Matthews.
No, gnomes are your category, not mine. So he's 5'10 or 5'11. He's like about 160, 170 pounds. So he's not overly physical. It's a quick arm, but the consensus was reliever, two-pitch guy. They're saying three-pitch guy. He could be, hey, maybe he's flashed a third pitch. And, you know, they've obviously done their homework on him. But I didn't think Kevin Matthews – I thought that Kevin Matthews at 33 and Zach Cone at 37 were both guys they could have probably gotten later. Maybe not Zach Cone, but if you don't get Zach Cone, you know what? To me, you say, well, happy on your way.
Yeah.
That guy's had a pretty rough college career. And now we always heard he was going to go 30 to 45. During Georgia this year, I heard consistently – he will knock out of the second round for sure, no matter how bad his year goes. But here's a guy, still doing bad impersonations. Here's a guy who has an OPS under 700, if memory serves, who moves. His best tools are his speed and his defense in center field. He moved to left this year. Now, there's a good reason for that. He had a harrowing collision with a teammate where he's so big and fast that he basically put the teammate, the collision paralyzed his teammate. And scouts said that he played a tentative center field after that, and they moved him to left. But to me, Kevin Matthews and Ryan and Zach Cone at 33 and 37, both those picks are reaches.
I agree, and I really expected with the Rangers, you know, going safe and getting two signable guys last year with Deglin and Skoll.
Yeah,
I thought they would make a bigger splash this year.
I agree.
You know, I kind of thought maybe they would make a run at Josh Bell. Who knows? They still have that chance if they want it. But.
They probably had good information on Josh Bell, but I just still thought in their last two drafts, last year, Deglin, I like Skoll. Luke Jackson, I'm not 100% of a Luke. Luke Jackson's actually a lot like Kevin Matthews in a lot of ways. He's skinny. He does not have like a durable innings eater, 200 innings. You don't look at either of those guys and think 200 innings.
Right.
There's some violence in both guys' deliveries. Not some violence, some effort in both those guys' deliveries. Both those guys were in high school drafts, with electric stuff, and premium athleticism. And I still had area scouts on both guys the last 2 years say reliever,
both guys. So they're power arms with feel for spin and an ability to spin the baseball. Those guys have those two things in common and athleticism. Kevin Matthews is like 5'10 and can, like, I had one scout tell me, just give him the basketball and get out of his way, and this guy's going to put on a dunking exhibition like that Division III dude this year was the YouTube sensation.
Yeah.
Kevin Matthews can do that stuff. But how does that help you? I mean, yeah, athleticism, I mean, you always helps, like, athletes, you. But
I mean, the weirdest thing for me about Matthews is he seemed like a reach just on talent. And it's not like he's going to be an easy sign. I mean, this guy's committed to Virginia, and, you know, that's a tough school to get guys away from. So
they clearly must think they're going to sign him, but I think he's in the same signability category as Taylor Beatty.
Tyler Beatty,
thank you. But for me, those picks were head-scratchers. I think the Rangers actually had the most head-scratching picks of anybody in the first day.
I think so, too. I agree.
Well, I hate to end on a down note, but that's how we're ending on a down note. That's probably better to end on that note than to end on bad impersonations. But a whole more day of the draft, two more days of the draft coming. The next time we podcast, I'm sure we'll have Jim Callis on to talk about it. Jim did a great job last night on the touchscreen. Wish we had more, but good to see Jim with an expanded role. Very happy for Baseball America to be such a part of the show on MLB Network. Want to thank MLB Network for that. Love our partnership that we have with them on the draft. And Connor, great job as always. Thanks for picking up my old ass. All right. We'll be back with another podcast. I'm sure I'm podcasting later today. As a matter of fact, on the college stuff with Aaron Fitt. And I'll probably cut podcasts on what I eat later today because Cushack is coming here. And hopefully I'll keep the bad impersonations to a minimum. For Connor Glassy, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.